hating to be wrong, and so that motivates me to learn a lot and try to keep reading and staying on top of stuff. It can get me into challenging situations over time, but I honor that for who I am, and I don't really care to know where it comes from, but I really like that about myself.
When's the last time you actually thought about your life insurance and if it's the right one for you? Hello, world. Uncharted Performance is sponsored by HealthIQ, a life insurance company that helps athletes and coaches like us, CrossFitters, weightlifters, endurance athletes, and strongman competitors, to name a few, get lower rates on their life insurance. They use actual science and data and not the outdated BMI, for example, to secure lower rates on life insurance for us. 56% of HealthIQ customers have saved between 40 to 33% on their life insurance. And who doesn't like a little extra cash and a greater peace of mind? And on top of that, HealthIQ is also the official life insurance partner of USA Weightlifting. Does a typical life insurer consider that you're doing the CrossFit Open, running triathlons, snatching 275 pounds, or just taking the simple steps to get healthier and fitter by the day? Unfortunately, they don't consider the fact that you train and lift weights and you are actually getting healthier and you will live longer. To work with someone that does and to support the show and see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/uncharted or mention the promo code uncharted when you talk to a HealthIQ agent. This episode is brought to you by Azoth 2.0. Before we get to our guest, here's what I'm up to now. I'm currently holding a full-time job, coach close to 10 hours a week, host two podcasts, including Uncharted, run two YouTube channels, run a travel blog, and train. That said, energy and more importantly, focus are at a premium. I can only guess and assume that many of you have as hectic or even busier schedules with work, family, side hustles, side projects, commuting, you name it. All this can lead to adrenal fatigue and result in depression, sleep problems, weight increase, and insulin insensitivity. Not exactly factors associated with productivity and performance. So what do I do? What do? In order to attain peak productivity, we need to be in an optimal mood, have ample energy, low levels to zero stress, sharp focus, be more efficient without crashing or tolerance buildup. Recently, I was introduced to Azoth 2.0, and unlike commonly used caffeinated beverages that only address focus or energy, Azoth 2.0 addresses all parts of productivity. So what is Azoth 2.0 exactly? It is the ultimate productivity formula containing patented ingredients to increase energy, focus, motivation, and mood to the next level without crashes, jitters, tolerance buildup, or withdrawals, all the things we want to avoid. What does Azoth 2.0 do exactly? It leads to a reduction in cortisol, increases blood flow and oxygen to the brain, increases energy without jitters, optimizes sense of well-being and mood. If that wasn't enough, the team at Azoth have a fully disclosed label so the consumers can exactly see what is in the product, nor are they supported by any VCs, venture capitalists, or any outside investment. We are beyond excited for this product and the immense success it has had and our collaboration with the Azoth team. If you're interested in trying this incredible product, please use the link in our show notes on our website and use the coupon code UNCHARTED, all caps, for 10% off at seekingazoth.com. Ladies and gentlemen, another episode closer to 100. Welcome back to Uncharted Performance. I am your friendly neighborhood podcast host, Paul Wenzel. This week, we are actually in beautiful Flagstaff, Arizona, checking out some of the incredible nature in this part of the U.S. and everything that it has to offer. And as coincidence might have it, Arizona is also home to this week's guest, as well as the CrossFit Open announcement of 18.4, but just slightly south of Flagstaff, just a little bit. For this week's episode, we are joined by none other than James Fitzgerald of OPEX. James has lived fitness and training for a better part of his life. He absolutely loves it. It is that love that has enabled him to compete at the highest level and transition to arguably being one of the top coaches on the planet. We cover his genesis from being an athlete and coach and the characteristics which have allowed him to continue to develop and ascend to the top of the sport for over 20 years. And some of the answers might actually surprise you. We explore the world of OPEX, including their unique approach to athlete assessment and progression, the concept of maximal aerobic power, or MAP for short,
along with its implications and application to training, the use of technology in coaching and training, as well as James's definition of success and his ultimate purpose. I have been following James ever since I was introduced to the sport of CrossFit and functional fitness training, and he has had a large influence of my development, and it is both a sincere honor and a pleasure to speak to him one-on-one. Before we start, we do get into a lot of detail, more than usual, on a number of the training topics that we discussed in the episode, so this will be a blast for many of you. But don't just listen, make sure to digest and apply, and take the resources we mentioned. Take note of the resources we mentioned, which are also included in the show notes on unchartedperformance.com. And as always, if you find the information valuable and or the conversation entertaining, please share and consider taking a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes. Talk to you soon, fam, and enjoy the episode. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are joined by the man, the myth, the legend, James Fitzgerald of OPEX. James, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, it's good to be here. Was that the bad joke?
No, it's coming.
The legend? Oh, it's coming.
That was not the bad joke. No, but we have had a friend of yours, a former athlete, on the show a few times, Marcus Philly.
Oh, excellent.
Of Revival Strength, and he's been a huge advocate for us, and we've learned a lot from him as well. But from my understanding, you were a mentor of his for many years and continue to be so. So the bad joke or the first question is, who is fitter, you or Marcus?
It depends on your definition of fitness, my friend.
Beautiful answer. let's say, who is stronger? Let's go with that question.
Oh, my God. That's a no-brainer. No-brainer, Marcus Philly.
All right. Who has greater aerobic capacity?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think that would have to go into a relative question, okay. Meaning that if you put us up, it would depend upon the modality in which it was tested. But I think internally, as an essence, I probably have a higher amount.
Got it. And let's go one more. Who is a better Olympic weightlifter?
Oh, by far, in efficiency and form and load, it's Marcus Philly.
Oh, wow. Just giving up to Marcus, man.
Yeah. No. He should be proud of those things, not just in comparison to me, but the work that he's done on trying to improve those.
Okay. Awesome. So with the bad joke out of the way, we threw out an APB like we tend to do when we have a guest coming on to our listeners, our audience. And in summary, I guess the general question was, are you the smartest man in fitness?
I saw that. That was kind of a tough question to answer. Uh-huh. I think that because of, you know, in regards to fitness back in the 90s, you know, everyone who was inside of it was smart, but because mm-hmm. of the information economy and you know, intense fitness and the fitness for all being blown up, everyone's an expert and everyone's involved. But I think I kind of stayed the course on asking some critical questions in fitness. Mm-hmm. So it just looked like, because of that, there was intelligence stamped next to my name on fitness. I wouldn't make the claim of the smartest person, but I would definitely feel proud of saying that I asked a lot of critical questions around fitness.
Okay. And I think that's actually a wonderful segue into what we'll get into a little bit more, but there are a couple major sporting events going on right now. And
yeah,
one is being the Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
And the other one being the CrossFit Games or CrossFit Open.
Yeah.
So in regards to, I guess, the Olympics, and obviously it's the winter, but in terms of the Summer Olympics, yeah. Do you think fitness would ever make it to the Olympic Games?
Well, I don't know if you know about my history, but that is one of my big goals, yeah. is to get a part of the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So our goal is 2028 for LA, possibly Paris in 2024, okay. But 2028 in LA, we'd love to have champions in functional fitness crowned under the IF3, which is the International Functional Fitness Federation. That would be a big, you know, long-term goal for me. I do want to have a place there. I think it's a really exciting sport. I think it has longevity involved in it. I think there's a lot of answers to how to train everyone for it, and how to coach people in it. And that leads, of course, to, you know, lots of opportunity for people. So I think there's a lot of beauty in it. and there's a lot of possibility. So that's, I'd like to see it in that area.
Okay. And as you mentioned, you've kind of started heading in that direction some time ago, actually, in the past year, maybe even longer. What kind of obstacles and challenges have you faced in their kind of early journey?
Early is really just organization, organizing a group and a company, a nonprofit group, IF3, creating a global presence and connecting everyone who's involved with it. The red tape and political regulations around governing bodies, sport governing bodies, national organizations, what is a sport, get a table, you know, get a seat at the table, the IOC, et cetera, et cetera. That's been the major hurdles. Secondary to that would be people not knowing the difference between fitness versus fitness as a sport. And that's a tough one to overcome with education and marketing, but that's a minor one in my eyes, but those are some of the roadblocks.
Got it. And the how can people support your goal?
Great. Well, I'm very honored that you asked that question, so I really appreciate that.
You got it.
And you know what? I don't have a script answer to it, but what I would say is that just stay involved as an athlete and a coach, and eventually, you know, opportunities will be presented to you. And I would say, you know, meet them with open arms and get on board with the idea. If you're really inspired by the fact of a profession and a real career for people, for coaching and participation as an athlete in the sport, then, you know, just stay connected to us at the IF3.
Okay, awesome. And we'll make sure to link that up in the show notes as well.
Okay, I know you have
a couple outlets when people can follow you besides OpenX and whatnot.
Yeah.
The other event that's going on right now are the CrossFit Games with the CrossFit Open.
Yes.
Thoughts, and this, we're recording this right after 18.1.
Yeah.
Which for many, that might not know, is the first workout in the CrossFit Open. Any early thoughts, any early surprises or predictions for this year?
Yeah, no surprises. And I think that I'm not surprised anymore simply due to the experience and numbing of it or been through it numerous times. So, you know, all good things, you know, the what goes on around the opens is the biggest learning for me right now as a coach, just like its effect on gyms and its effect on, you know, how people prepared. And then you can look back and see who prepared for what to go through it. So the way I like to look at it, so people could recognize, is this is the best time in the year for a coach, because your eyes are wide open. You are really sensitive to everything that's happening. It's the magic time, right, for vulnerability, for that relationship between coach and athlete. So it's a really good time right now. In regards to the first workout, I won't unfold anything that people already don't know, but for the 25 percentile of the best in the world. The leaderboard scatter is largely based upon body weight and what they could do for the row cals and the distribution of row cals, for what body weight had an impact to play on that. I think if the workout extended out to 60 minutes, which of course sounds crazy, but it may have changed a couple of things in terms of total measures of capacity. But of course, we're limited to YouTube and CrossFit's methodology on 20 minutes to be stuck within 20 minutes to measure that. It was definitely more, you know, grip dominant. I liked the aspect of a slightly new skill that people had to learn. And mind you, there were some, you know, shittier versions of technique that are never being scored on video by people, but at least, you know, it's a slightly new movement that challenges folks. And I'm a purist, so I like the simple stuff that's just real hard work. And there was some of that aspect inside of this workout that I appreciated.
Awesome. And as you mentioned in the opening, you've been at this for a while. I think OpenX.
Yeah, I was doing fitness competitions before it was fitness competitions.
Exactly.
That's how old I am.
Actually, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you right now?
I'm 44.
Okay. You don't look a day past, let's say, 34.
Yeah, you can't even see me, though. How do you know?
I did. I saw you for a second.
That's a picture when I was 30. I still sell.
Plus, I follow you on Instagram, so I know. But you've been, and you're still at it in various capacities.
Yep.
And that's a long time. It's been over 20 years at the highest level.
Yeah.
What are some of the key elements that have helped you stay on top of the game for such a long time?
Yeah, I think being a coach certainly helps because, you know, if I was just purely an athlete, I'd probably have been burned and dead by now. But being a coach, I think you're getting up in front of people and teaching them. And so that keeps you kind of honest. And so I connected, you know, very quickly as I started my journey in CrossFit, as an example, to the difference in the health continuum. And so that's kind of kept me honest to keep that on my shoulder, which has pulled me away from really what I would consider my highest level for the longest period of time. But I think it's been a good result for me to continue to want to exercise every day, which I love doing. I love exercise. I'm obsessed around it. I'm very disciplined on it. And I love learning about different kinds of things, which is the reason why I got into mixed modal training in the first place. But yeah, I think that's why really as an answer is because I was a coach. So I had the cognitive function to kind of look from the outside perspective in and say, is this going to be really good for you when you're 55, you know? If you're not a coach, you don't care about that. You're just, you know, I'm 27, full of vigor, and I'll just go for it because who cares about when I'm 35?
Got it. And being a coach can, you know, great answer, right? But, you know, if you want to be a coach, that can only take you so far. What have you, I guess, as that coach, how have you developed and differentiated yourself from, let's say, people that were in your same boat when you were starting out or kind of moving into that space that kind of separated you? What have been some of the key differentiators that have allowed you to, again, stay at the elite level?
Yeah, I think the best way to phrase that question is not what I have done to differentiate myself, but what has differentiated myself. Because I didn't actually lead the inspiration. I just loved fitness. I'm always challenging folks. Like, I don't know anyone who thinks as much about everything involved in fitness as I do. And there could be other people, but I think that was the differentiator. Not the one that I proposed to do, if that makes sense.
Okay, got it.
I've just always been super inspired by it. The genesis of it comes from my story. I identified as an athlete. I lost my identity as a young age. I recognized that I was no one once I didn't have that athlete, you know, perspective. I discovered fitness. Fitness gave me a rebirth of a new person, and I'm in debt to fitness forever because of that.
Wonderful. And so segueing into OPEX, and OPEX is known for a lot of key differentiators as well. And I'm just going to plug a fellow colleague of mine, actually my boss, my coach, mentor, Tom Rini, on help in preparing for our conversation.
Awesome.
But we've noticed that one of the key things that separates OPEX is the baseline assessment. And regardless of level of athlete or individual, it's arguably the most intense and lengthy of any fitness gym that we are aware of. Why, what is it, and how do you progress out of it?
Yeah, great question. So I'm kind of stuck in my head on the why part first, but make sure you back me up if you want the other things covered. But
I will.
I think the thing that I recognized just through my practice over time was, you know, when you first started training, or when I did anyways in the 90s, you were kind of given these tools to look at because it was an academic practice, right? Because it was always the code that you're not going to prescribe just anything. You know, you have to figure out what are these baseline pieces, to use your words, before you design a program. So it was well accepted. But with the free market, and as I said, information economy and the exposure to fitness, people just wanted to get shit done and were super creative, but they lost sight of this question, like, well, why are you actually doing what you're doing? So that's why we felt that assessment was really important and a key component in a fitness design, not because it just makes sense, but because it actually asks the coach to have all the tools and pieces in place to actually write a design, because you can't escape from what we call the truth, right? So if someone comes in, and whether you like it or not, they're 30% body fat, you know, their right knee is fucked up and they can't lunge, and they can't put their left hand over their head, they can bend pretty good and their squatting pattern's okay, right? And they're like, well, I want to do X, Y, Z. Then the assessment basically just punches them in the face with the truth. It's like, well, you want to do X, Y, Z, but you can't do any of these things, while, of course, laying out exactly what the progression looks like for them to get there. So you can see there's a whole bunch of honesty wrapped inside of an assessment, which is why we really like it and we propose coaches use it. You know, if I was to just start today from zero, call a company James's Fitness, the way I would raise the most popularity would just basically to write creative programs, right? So if I wanted to gain like massive, you know, millions of people of popularity, I put, you know, boobs and asses and an awesome program out there for everyone to touch, right?
Yeah, clickbait, yeah.
The reason why that would be more sexy as opposed to writing a book about assessing folks in fitness, because no one wants the truth. As fucked up as it sounds, like no one actually wants to see that they're not going to get a muscle up in 2 months. And that's, you know, that doesn't sell. It's not sexy. It doesn't work for commercial interest. You get where I'm going. So that's the big reason around why we set that up. What's inside of our assessment is really theoretical. I like to say that our OPEX assessment is really a collection of all of my mentors and colleagues and giants that I've stepped on over the past 20 years who've really done inquisition in fitness. And I've kind of just put it together in one format. So we have these three areas. We investigate the body, we investigate movement, and we investigate work. And at the end of that, the coach will have a pretty good idea as to what should go into that fitness program. And then your last question, how do you start implementing that? In most cases, the data you get from the assessment kind of clearly orients you towards where they should start. My commentary is generally your program begins where your ability ends. And so that's where the coach who's not the most competent or most intelligent or has 12 years of university could go through the assessment, and what gets spit out is an obvious solution to that person's problems. And that's how we've kind of created the assessment, was based upon creating success in that program design. I hope that answers the question.
It does. How long does the assessment take?
Most times, three sessions.
Okay.
Let's say it's been beta proof for a number of years. Mm-hmm. I used to do a 2-session, kind of 90-minute, 2-session piece for folks who are – and this is not for NFL football players. We weren't trying to develop an assessment tool that – you know, like the FMS, which is indifferent. It's more movement, but it still has the same idea. FMS, they wanted to do that so that everyone could go through it, right? Which is a great reason to have it. But ours was really based upon, I would call it not the bottom 10%, who I would classify as like rehabilitative, in a toxic setting, dysfunctional, et cetera, or the top 10%. That would be like sports specificity, high performance. You know, so what we call it, the 80% in the middle, that really just wants to do fitness to develop higher orders of physical expression and concepts on what physicality means to them. And so that's, you know, we have that in place to certainly help those people. And we take them through it generally 3 sessions, and it kind of gets the answers. And then we do a reassessment generally every month or every couple of months, depending upon the experience of the client, what their goals are.
Got it. So out of those three elements, the body, movement, and work, can you just give us a quick example of each and what an OPEX coach or you would do with an athlete?
Yeah. Body would be an investigation to anthropometrics, height, body weight, lean mass, fat mass. And depending upon the diagnostics you got to work with, you could go into some functional diagnostic nutrition stuff, blood work, et cetera, et cetera. Movement is pretty much, if you want to think of it, you know, taking people through a leveled process. We call it like an adventure playbook, where you take them through these basic movement patterns of lunging, squatting, bending, pushing, pulling, and core. And then as they progress through those, they get to develop and move into more advanced levels of those movements in the assessment. Mm-hmm. And that allows us to figure out, like, where do people start? Do they start with mainly just core conditioning and stability work? Are they into just worrying, you know, trying to overcome their own body weight and move that correctly? Are they into a pattern now where they can start doing load? Or are they in a pattern where they can, you know, start doing loads and compare what those loads, you know, mean for their higher levels of fitness? And then in work, we pretty much just try to find this intricate balance between what their anaerobic and aerobic potential is. And we think that at that base support, if you have those body mechanics, the idea on how they move, and an area where you think they should start on conditioning relative to their goals, then you pretty much have a good starting point on their program design. Now, there's more intricate pieces inside of that, but that would be the basics of it.
Got it. And in terms of the movement assessments, you mentioned that people can kind of graduate onto higher level of movement.
Yes.
Has there ever been a case, and I guess this is a fairly general ambiguous question, when people actually can't graduate out of the assessment?
Oh, Jesus, yes. No, it's not set up to – sounds surprising answer, hey? No, it's not set up to be a graduation process, although that's a really great theoretical idea.
Yeah.
As an example, you know, so people would do a squat pattern, you know, a toe touch, a step up, an FLR, some bridging, planking. You know, those are what we call our level one assessments. And we have some more intricate, you know, things to look at once inside that. But their goal is not to get to a point where they're doing their power snatch to front squat ratio in level four. You know what I'm saying? So, but the thing is that if they wind up, you know, scoring in level one, meaning that they fail some pieces and you see there's pieces to work on in a level one setting, then that directly correlates to what goes into design. But I can tell you it's not power snatching and front squatting.
Got it. Very cool. You mentioned kind of the work piece and another differentiator. I'm hoping, hopefully I'm developing a theme here of the conversation is this thing called MAP.
Yes.
And I had the pleasure of actually doing one of your programs that you were kind enough to post for free online. Cool. And I was like, I obviously couldn't figure out at first what MAP meant until I looked it up. But a lot of other people do not know what that means. And it seems to be very specific and unique to you and OPEX. If you could be kind enough to share what MAP is, what it means, and again, the value and benefits of it.
All right. Well, this is going to test my mastery because those three letters generally take about, you know, 12 hours to talk about and discuss in my program design course.
So you have 10 to 15 minutes of footnotes.
No pressure. Okay, here we go. Don't put this on speed, by the way, if people are listening to it on 1.5 times. No, I'm kidding. MEP stands for maximal aerobic power. I propose a working knowledge around the development of the aerobic continuum for the purpose of developing the aerobic ability. Now, I take that stance, which is slightly different than most other people. Most other people teach aerobic training for either sport performance or asking the question, how is this going to make me lean or how am I going to burn fat most effectively? Which I think are both broken models to look at to develop the aerobic system. My theories, as well as, you know, I guess now proven methods of aerobic training, which is called maximal aerobic power development, is based on the idea of pace theory and volume. So pace theory means that you build people through endurance and slower concepts first, which is not new to endurance training, and you build pace over time, but through a graduated format of pace improvement. So you start people with what we call MAP 10, which is the slowest version of what we call, you know, our maximal aerobic power training. And then as they graduate through, you know, just like as people graduate through doing, you know, a squat pattern more effectively, they eventually get to lift higher loads. There's never really been someone who's dedicated a lot of time and effort like we have to saying what is progression of the aerobic ability for people just in fitness, you know. There is pretty much everything out there for development of strength and progressions of it, but not in the aerobic patterning. And that's what MAP basically means, where we take people from slower pace aerobic training and we increase that pace over time, but it's a graduated approach so that they can't get to these higher levels of aerobic training pace if they don't develop the volume or the subsequent pace control.
Got it. So how do you complement that with strength development?
Well, if it's true aerobic training, mm-hmm. in theory, it should not have any implications on strength development.
Okay. So
aerobic training, if it's done correctly, mm-hmm. should not have massive impacts on eccentric contractions or such a cardio output overload that it affects the central nervous system and, you know, electricity, basically, mm-hmm. which does not allow you to fire the right kind of fibers for more challenging contractions. Where people get into trouble is when their aerobic training becomes glycolytic, or when they call aerobic training something, but it's actually not sustainable. So people are like, well, I run for 20 minutes five times a week and I'm getting weaker. Well, yeah, that's because number one, you're doing eccentric contractions in your aerobic training. And number two, your running is not sustainable. So if you were to make that running and turn it into swimming, rowing, bear crawl, whatever, mm-hmm. and it's less eccentric, but maybe a little bit of running, and then you taught them pace, you would actually see a linear improvement that actually could be better than just weight training alone for their strength.
Got it. So they are not at odds if done correctly. If done appropriately within and programmed for appropriately, the development of aerobic capacity and strength development can be unified.
They can be unified. Be careful of your words. Aerobic okay. capacity has, you know, in their definition, a threshold connected to it. So okay. when you do get into VO2 max settings or high aerobic threshold training, it will have somewhat of an impact on the central nervous system as well as strength development. Okay. But if aerobic training is done correctly in the true definition of aerobic training, then yes, it should not have. And my argument is what I've seen, especially since we've been in CrossFit for a while, mm-hmm. which try to get good at everything, is that I've actually seen better improvements in strength over time with correct aerobic training than no aerobic training alone and only strength work.
Got it. So which leads me to
– which is fascinating, right? But
it,
I mean
– it is.
We're in our own little bubble. I mean, who am I to stand up at an NSCA conference and tell all these strength coaches that their football players need to be doing more aerobic training?
Yeah, no, very, very good point. And one of the things that was striking to me was, you know, I think it was like 60-minute-hour rower and being able to, again, to borrow your words, to be able to pace yourself, set – you're not going at, you know, an intensity that it's not intended to be and having the desired effect, which is, again, to me was refreshing. I didn't think I could do it, but I put on a different podcast or anything you just listen to it and enjoy and have a good time with it. But something that I don't think a lot of people are used to or not haven't experienced it. And I think it's something that others should definitely explore and dive into and incorporate into their not only training but program design.
Yeah, and you know, aerobic training is patience training, and that's what people need to recognize. And secondly, I would ask people to not get stuck up on what they believe aerobic training is. And this is where we get, you know, lost is, mm-hmm. is folks can't recognize how grappling for 3 hours is aerobic training, right? Because all they know as aerobic training identity is someone running, or all they know is like, you know, an ultra marathoner, or all they know is a spin bike in the corner of a Globo gym, right? Mm-hmm. That's such a lower order version of aerobic training. So if you open your eyes to what aerobic training could be, and it's slapped with the definition such that it is sustainable efforts, then you'll start to open up your eyes to a whole lot of possibilities of what true aerobic training is.
So this actually – so again, beautiful segue again. So this gets me into the idea of – or the discussion of multiple training sessions versus, let's say, a longer single duration session for you know, athletes or anyone in general, where – there's programs that have, you know, multiple sessions throughout the day that focus on different things that might be, you know, 45 to an hour in nature with again, different focus, or versus a session that's about 2 to 3 hours long that has all those different elements incorporated into it, you know, in terms of endurance, strength, multimodal and whatnot. What are your opinions, advice, experience on the multi-session versus marathon sessions?
Yeah, well, we can't it's not that I'm going to divulge from answering it, but remember that you can't really come up with what my opinion is on something unless I have context around who we're talking about. So let's just say that it's for anyone that's just interested in the idea around it, I'll mm-hmm. share some principles on it.
Yeah, so wonderful. Thank you.
The way that you organize things, the first thing you have to do is recognize the dose effect of each of those pieces. So put them into three buckets. Strength training, let's call it CP, right? ATP work. Let's call it lactate training, which would be glycolytic work, or let's call it true aerobic training. And mm-hmm. so if we assume that those are three different buckets of work, the first thing you have to do is recognize how each of them work with one another in close proximity or apart from each other. And so if you understand the dose effect of each one of those, then it will clearly help you organize exactly how you mix them in the session, even if you do or do not want to do it. So mm-hmm. when people really recognize that you can, after you do true lactic training or glycolytic training, you can't do anything afterwards, meaning you can, but your nervous system is hit, your glycogen levels are depleted, your electricity component or your, let's call it proprioceptive technique, your proprioceptive ability, even range of motion is decreased, your adrenals are a little tapped. You could see, I can give you a bunch more examples, but the only pretty much thing you should do after that is lie down on a cot or go for a walk, right? Or go yeah. for a swim, you know? So if we recognize that, that's the only one we got to be truly concerned about, that which follows that up. So for example, you wake up on a Tuesday morning, you want to do a 30-minute session, and that 30-minute session is going to be glycolytic. Well, then depending upon how you recover from that dictates as to when you do the next session. So if you get a rookie in fitness, or you get someone who's super powerful, or someone who truly knows how to do lactic training, and they do that on Tuesday morning, honestly, most people will not truly recover to set themselves up for a good session until Wednesday night. That's 36 hours later mm-hmm. from that session. Does that mean that they don't want to do anything Tuesday afternoon? No, but I'm just saying if you want to do anything that's effective, you may want to wait till Wednesday night. So if that was the decision you had, then you know that you can only do easy shit Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. Why? Because you won't be recovered until Wednesday night to do that again. So instead, what do? Well, maybe you do aerobic training Tuesday morning. Well, under the definition I said earlier, under the true definition of aerobic versus strength training, they actually should be intertwined fairly easily. It does take a bit of a mechanic and a good program design artist to put it together effectively, but those can be in the same session together if it's done effectively. And they can be done on the front end, back end, or, you know, I've had so much experience with it now that they actually can be mixed together in principle. Okay. So if you were to have one session alone and that's all you wanted to do and you want all three buckets in, then it would make sense that you would do aerobic and CP work on the front end and your hard shit on the back end. Why? Because I said earlier, because of the acute response of the lactic system, you can't recover in time to make any of those other two pieces, CP and aerobic, work shit if you do a lactic training first. If people want to spread it out in the day, I think that's admirable too. But you have to remember the functional demands of different biorhythms for the day. So if you do a big session of 90 minutes, you may have enough cortisol that helps to support all the fuel utilization for that session. If you do three sessions and you split all those three up, so let's say aerobic morning, CP at lunch, lactic in the evening, excuse me, you're going to probably put more work into each one. So you're probably going to have an overall more detrimental effect on the cortisol curve, because you have to derive a higher amount of, you know, neural work and fuel utilization for each of those pieces. Now, that's not a right or wrong, but mm-hmm. you just have to be careful that people are resilient enough to do it. So I know I was broad and gray on the answer, but if you know the principles and how each of them work with one another, it's fairly easy to organize what's best. And in the end, it's very individualized based upon the functional demands of the person, i.e. someone wants to look good naked, then one session should suffice. If you want to be a regionals athlete in CrossFit, you have to know how to do three in a day. Why? Because it's actually part of the sport itself.
Do you like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver? Well, guess what? Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a healthy, conscious lifestyle. People who train, work out, and eat healthy shouldn't have to pay as much for life insurance. It's that simple. The training we already do can save us 25% on our life insurance. That's because people like us who exercise have 56% lower risk of heart disease, 34% lower risk of all-cause mortality, and 22% lower risk of cancer. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ, and to learn more and get a free quote, head over to healthiq.com/uncharted. Wonderful. How do we measure this? Are there efficient?
Oh, to determine what's best?
Yeah.
Or to determine the dose response?
Let's say both. Let's actually go with both.
Okay, well, the dose response is fairly easy. You know, if you finish CP training, you should feel invigorated. If you finish aerobic training, it should just be some good breathing. Mm-hmm. And if you feel to finish lactic training, you should just flop down on the ground. So that's a pretty simple measure to be like, okay, that's what I just did there, okay? And that's like an indirect response in order to do it. How you measure it, that's a great question. You actually just have to watch trends as to how each training session works upon one another. So to make it real simple, you plan out a concept, you put it together for a week, and then you go back and review, like, how did that all that shit work together at the end of the week, right? Did you recover on Wednesday? Mm-hmm. How'd you feel for the Thursday session, et cetera, et cetera? And then you set together these really small principles of progressive overload in all those areas of skill development and adding volume. And then, you know, you can either going to pull back or you're going to move forward. And in most cases, people start way too robust. So the way that I explain it to coaches to get started with individuals is whatever you're thinking to put on paper, minus that by 20% and start that with them. And then you'll see that they'll finish and everything's good. And then you can just start adding pieces to it. And you probably got a good system in place then if they start working. You know, if Tuesday looks good, Thursday's good, Friday's a better session, Saturday they wrap it up, they feel great. Well, fantastic. You got a great week together. Let's build upon it. Let's add more to it. That's how you measure it.
Got it. So to kind of dig a little deeper, what kind of tools do you use, if any, maybe technologically speaking, to help you assess and measure the progress of a certain athlete?
Yeah, well, we use Fitbot, which is an online training platform to connect data. So we use the training sessions and repeatable work, loads used, recovery from those sessions, and weekly trends to dictate if we're actually improving, right? Like the way I like to say, the iron never lies. So you're either getting stronger or you're not. It's pretty simple. So we could look at those specific numbers and what people are doing as an indicators into the central nervous system. We have tried a bunch of different pieces with Inside Technology, Whoop Band being one of them that we sponsor a number of our athletes with. We work with that company, and it's fairly good just to give insight. Uh-huh. I wouldn't say it's the answer, but it's fairly good to get insight. There's a big push in the future where that's going to be scaled and it's going to be much better to look at probably through your phone, just a thumbprint or a little bit of a broad prick on your thumb or something like that, which would be far more in detail. But we've kind of played with that and we get some indications. But I can tell you the number one thing that is really effective is really a 5-question questionnaire that we ask all of our clients to do. It's pretty much just a simple readiness questionnaire based upon soreness, fatigue, vitality, et cetera. And that tells us a lot when that's measured for a really long period of time about trends.
Got it. Do you ever adjust during a training session or during a certain day with an athlete, depending how they're responding?
Do we what, sorry?
Do you ever adjust during a training session?
Yes, but it depends upon the context of the relationship. If the person is online and they're in Yugoslavia and I'm in Arizona, then I have to teach them what critical drop-off is and give them the okay to say, if this shit's not going like this, pull the cord, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, send me a text if it's not too late in your day or too early in my morning and let me know if we need to switch shit around. Yeah, when it's live with people, i.e. for our athletes that are in our gym that I work with every day, it's very simple to tweak and change things. And yes, we do a lot of that, but that's the power of working in place with people. And the tweaks are minor, but they're really effective to ensure there's this, the highest speed of adaptation.
Got it. Kind of bring it back to something that we talked about earlier on, and you basically following your passion to be a coach, and as you are now, what has led you and allowed you to, besides asking questions, to continue to be a successful coach?
Well, I think the term success is only inside the mind of that coach, because they're the only ones that determine if they're successful or not. What was your question again?
What has led you, if you, let me actually rephrase that question based on what you just said.
Yeah, because I got caught up in what success means.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So do you think you have been successful as a coach?
Oh, yeah. In my mind, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what has led you to that success besides asking questions?
Oh, yeah. Great question. Let me take a second to ponder on that one.
Got it.
I think the base goes back to the initial question that I was just really super interested in fitness, okay. To be honest. Based upon my background in sport and then the injury and then like just falling in love with it. And then when you fall in love with it, it's kind of something that's like you're akin to it, you know, it's like part of you. And, I think that really has allowed me to keep staying in my mind as success as a coach. I think secondarily, I have a human trait of, hating to be wrong. And so that motivates me to learn a lot and try to keep reading and staying on top of stuff. It can get me into challenging situations over time, but I honor that for who I am. And I don't really care to know where it comes from, but I really like that about myself. And I'm a very curious person. So I've always been super curious as a young kid and even as a young adult into adulthood. I mean, I continue to be super curious. And I love asking the big questions, you know, about why we're here. And I study philosophy and existentialism and nihilism and antinatal theory and purpose and awareness and consciousness. So I'm super curious about those bigger picture items. And I think that has a big part to play with me, you know, just certainly being successful in coaching. And I also really, I'm really good, honestly, at, being sensitive to people's emotions, and I'm pretty sensitive to the fact of where people are in their own consciousness and awareness. And I think from that, I've developed some great relationships through that, and I think that has helped me succeed as a coach.
Wonderful. So how do you define success?
Well, as I said, success is only defined in the person, right? So my definition of success, I'll make it simple, is just really happiness with what you're doing.
Okay.
And I'm happy. I have lots of moments of gratitude per day. I smile a lot. I really, when I look on the outside looking in and I look at what I do and what I am and what I've become, I've as I like to say, I'm pretty fucking lucky. I got a lot of positive things going on in my life, and I'm really grateful for that. And so that's how it'd be my, you know, indication of success is looking from the outside when no one's watching, and am I smirking and am I really enjoying it? And I am.
What is your purpose?
You know, I think that changes, over time. If you were to ask me, you know, prior to my kids, it would be different. Prior to my relationship, it would be different. Prior to my job, it would be different. But where I sit right now at 44 years of age and the founder of OPEX and leading this charge on professional coaching and being a husband and a father and loving fitness, I would say right now is trying to figure out the why behind existence. That's a big, you know, that's my purpose right now.
And why share? Why? Because this is, I guess, a difficult question to ask. Because
no, I think I know what you're asking. Yeah. Sharing, I think, is because there's a lot of self-doubt in sharing. Most times, sharing doesn't happen at the expense of one's ego.
Okay.
So when sharing doesn't occur, because I've rehabbed a lot of people through their thoughts on this, most times they don't want to share because they actually give a shit about what others think about their sharing, which is actually ironic because I teach them that no one actually gives a shit about them. So it's kind of funny that they don't want to share. So because I just had – and this is on the tip of my tongue. That's why I was keen to pick up on where your question was going, because I just consulted with a lady a couple hours ago who one of her biggest struggles was – I'll just make it brief, but, you know, being vulnerable and like putting herself out there. But she did have self-confidence and she thought where she wanted to go and what her goals were admirable. And they were going to lead her towards vitality. So they were measurable and they were worthy, right? But she just got in her own way from previous identification she had as a child on what she believed to be worthwhile in sharing. And all it took, honestly, was me making her recognize that if she did share things, she may actually change some people's lives, right? And she may actually contribute. And she never thought about it in that way. And so when you think about sharing in general, if it's done with the right state of mind, that you're doing it for the purpose of just being vulnerable and just, you know, giving out ideas and opinions, then you'll never know who you can touch and what kind of threads of communities and groups and ideas and conversation you're going to start with that.
So, which leads me to the coaching education that is led by you and by OPEX.
Mm-hmm.
Who is it for?
Yeah, great question. It's definitely for the coach who's trying to find their way mm-hmm. right now. I would say in a bigger piece. It's definitely for the coach who can see themselves honoring one-to-one training programs, most likely in a micro gym setting, or in their own little, you know, garage gym setting. That's where our education really certainly helps that kind of an avatar. So will we get like a 56-year-old, you know, PhD professor in there who's just, you know, interested in education? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Will we get the 14-year-old in there that, you know, wants to just be a savant and open up a gym? Probably not. But we will get someone in there who's probably younger, probably has experienced some interesting stuff in fitness, probably has licked that, you know, that wonderful taste of inspiration in fitness, and wants to take it to another level, which is they want to now share that information with other people. And CCP is a great way for those folks to come in and learn principles and change people's lives.
Got it. How does one get involved with CCP?
Well, in mechanics, it would be opexfit.com. Uh-huh. And people can just go there. And we got lots of free information and different things you can touch. You know, we've been more forthright with giving and sharing and giving that information out to people, so that they can really experience what we do. It also allows us to really define the audience, obviously, that it's good for.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process, we may certainly help some people. But just go to opexfit.com and you can get lots of info if you're interested.
Yeah, and there's actually a great free toolkit that's out there too.
That toolkit is just brand new. It's been reinvented a couple of times. And I always thought each time, I was like, wow, that's some good shit in there. and this one especially is quite good. We've taken a lot of the extraction of CCP and put it inside, and it's quite good, I must say.
Yeah, so we'll link that up as well, and I'll second that opinion as well.
thank you.
When someone says OPEX, what do you want people to think or to feel?
Yeah, I want them to think about smart fitness, you know, for them to see that we really critically think around the medium of fitness and what it should be for people. I want people to look at that word and know that we really think hard around the definition of fitness and what it means to people. And in the end, like I say, I just want people, when they see OPEX or say it or they've ever said it, I want fitness to be right next to that word.
Okay. Now you touched upon, some deeper questions earlier in terms of why do we exist, or the why behind existence. So thinking, I guess, long term, after you're long gone, mm-hmm. hopefully not anytime soon, but, you know, 300 years from now, when people...
Well, I'm hoping to get to 82, so I got 38 left.
So there you go. But let's say somebody picks up, in the year 2300, somebody finds... Yep. A book you write or an ebook that you wrote, what do you want your legacy to be?
Great question. I think, you know, if it's 250 years removed, the way that I would look at that would be to say, what kind of things do we look at right now that sapiens were involved with in the year 1800? And there's not a lot of shit that we remember. A fascinating stuff that happened in 1800 that's actually worth talking about today. So unless you're a historian, I'm just being realistic that yeah. with speed of technology, if our planet gets to 2300, if there's actually papers that are still around, if we're not overrun and put in cages from artificial intelligence, then there might be some connection to this group that really asked a lot of questions on fitness back in 2017.
Got it.
Big if.
How has your studies and outside of fitness helped you develop as a fitness professional?
Yeah, great question. I think there was some point in my career where just through the practice of reading, which is another positive of reading because it allows just this opening of inspiration of other things you never thought possible unless you did do reading. But I started to read just, let's just call it other things that were not connected to the profession. And then because of my amount of reading that I did, I was able to extract all these principles off the paper that were applicable to my own life and to my own business and to my own practice of coaching. Mm-hmm. And that was beautiful because then I didn't see that reading a book on the market meant anything to fitness, but it meant everything to fitness because I was able to extract the principles and the systematics around it and everything around it, like how I learned and how the message was and how the book was delivered and what was the color of it, you know, and how many pages and how they kept me engaged. And what was the information inside and what were the principles that created success as to what the story of the book line is, et cetera, et cetera. So you can see that if I was to do that and I just look behind me on my shelf, like I have a book on, you know, Zen thought. I have a book on blood typing diet. I have a book on muscle dysfunction. I have a book on motor learning. I have a book on the end of life. I have a book on body weight gymnastics. I have a book on cancer. I got a book on fragility. I got a book on China. You know, so if you look at that, you'd be like, well, how the hell is that connected to mm-hmm. fitness coaching?
Exactly.
It's everything. Everything is connected to fitness coaching if you can see the principles that are extracted from the book. And so I was very lucky, like I mentioned, to be a very curious person. So I wanted to know the why behind, you know, everything that I read outside of coaching. And that was a massive benefit to me when I discovered that early in my career, because I was able to do parallel systematics to see success. So when people's like, well, how am I going to get this muscle up? I didn't only use my experience in getting a muscle up to teach them a muscle up. I've got 8 different versions of parallel systems that would work, that would help them in getting that muscle up, if that makes sense, because I've read outside of the fitness realm.
From those other things that you've read, is there one that stands out? One or two that stand out?
Geez, no. Okay. No.
Got it.
No, that would be unfair to the books.
No.
They're totally listening. No, they're right behind me. They're listening.
Yeah, no, I got it. I totally understand. You mentioned standing on the shoulders of giants earlier.
Yes. Or
learning from giants. Who are some of those people?
Yes, Charles Poliquin, Paul Check, Stu McGill, John Berardi, the Muscle Media 2000 guys, T Nation Underground guys, Dan Duchesne, Moore DePasquale. I think I mentioned Paul Check, West Side, Dave Tate, Louis Simmons. Verkashansky, Kramer, Matveyev, you know, all Eastern Bloc readings through books. Charles Staley, Ian King, Peter Twist, Mark Verstegen. Yeah. I apologize if I left a couple out, but that would be areas of, you know, super interest.
No. So this leads me to one of the final questions. So if someone is looking to learn from you, or you are their giant, where can they follow you? How can they get in contact with you?
Well, Instagram, my handle is jfitzopex, J-F-I-T-Z-O-P-E-X. Mm-hmm. And you can friend me on Facebook too. I'm sure with the interwebs, we probably have some connectors to mutual friends. My Twitter account is the same. I'm not that active on there, but I mean, I should be a lot more in terms of words. But that would be a way you can kind of see like the live time connection. Mm-hmm. The way that my job is set up, I really only can have a voice or really speak to people through mediums like this, which is why I'm really appreciative of you taking the time to do it with me. But this is where really you can get, you know, some access to conversation with me. I never hesitate on answering emails either. So james@opexfit.com, I give everyone my email because I'm not afraid of people asking questions. And I'm not fearful because I just know that no one uses mail anymore. So no one wants to type that long and get to like great conversation, but I still honor that stuff. And of course, through our CCP education and some of our live courses, that's where I really get to dig in and get dirty with some coaches and have some great conversation. So that may be an area if people are interested. But I'm not on the I'm not really. I guess I'm in social media, but I'm not really on the public scene to like, you know, talk consistently. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the future I need to do that a little bit more just to stay out there and be current.
Got it. What is next for you and OPEX?
Yeah, well, we have a book coming out this year that's going to be focused on professional fitness coaching and really driving the narrative of increasing the idea around what it means to be honoring the coaching profession. Mm-hmm. And then I've been doing a big personal project, which is pretty exciting. I've been writing a book on mixed modal training of everything that I've learned and experienced in it and how to train for it effectively, that I've really, through experience of doing it with thousands of people as well as up to this point, what I've learned thus far, I want to put it into a big super training, you know, Mel Siff style book. And I've been writing that and it's quite academic and lengthy. But that's a project that I've got going on. I hope to have finished up sometime this year. If my hands and my in carpal tunnel can handle it, because it has to be typed. It can't be dictated because of the numbers and the sequences that are in it. So I'm pretty excited around those two things. Of course, for my athletes, I love working with those folks day to day in person. I'm excited about them being vulnerable and going through the opens right now and then hopefully leading into the regionals and having a great experience there and continuing their journey of fitness. Our company is growing continuously. You know, we have over 30 employees here now at OPEX, and we're growing, culturally and by leaps and bounds, and our gyms around the world are growing. We hope to have 100 gyms by the end of 2018 in place, and that's been an awesome goal for us that we've been accomplishing. So we got lots of great things. As I said, I got a lot of great things to look forward to and on the horizon.
Awesome, and congratulations on the growth. And
thank you.
Me personally, I'm definitely excited to see the book come out. You actually beat me to it. I was going to ask you when do you think that will be completed, but James, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate your time. I know you're very busy, but it was an awesome conversation.
Yeah, well, thanks for your questions. I appreciate the interest.
You got it. Another amazing episode in the books, fam. If you enjoyed the episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. If you are new to the show, don't be afraid to check out other episodes. And if you dig the content, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. If you ever have any questions, feedback, or you just want to hit us up, please don't hesitate. Email address is contact@unchartedperformance, or you can hit me up directly at powell@unchartedperformance.com. Facebook and Instagram @UnchartedPerformance, and if Twitter is your thing, @ReachUncharted. And give us a follow and tag us to let us know who and where you are. As always, thank you for listening and supporting the podcast, and talk to you next week. Cheers, guys.